Good evening. I'm going to be moving out of the executive session for Las Aspira of Delaware Charter Operations Board. Can I have a motion to move to public session, please?
Motion to move, Burton.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
With thumbs up. Aye. So we'll move to the public session. Very quickly, let's review the agenda. There will be a couple, let's see. There's not really actions coming out of the executive session. We'll have items to vote on, but they're part of the regular agenda. We'll start with the review of the meeting minutes for the October meeting. Then we move to the financial committee report by Greg. And I also will have an update on the operations committee and then move to development committee as well as head of school report. So that covers the agenda for this evening. These are the meeting minutes for the October meeting. Give you a minute to review, and then I will need a proposal to approve both the agenda and meeting minutes as presented.
Lourdes, do we not have a December meeting? Is that correct?
Yes, actually we currently do not have a schedule at December meeting. At the conclusion of this meeting, we'll confirm that indeed we will not have a December meeting, but right now there's not a meeting scheduled for December. And that's part on our bylaws. Typically we will not have a December meeting or a July meeting unless there is a business that requires a special meeting that then we can call for that. At this moment, my prediction will be that we do not need the December meeting. Do I have a motion to approve meeting minutes and agenda as presented?
So approved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Great, thank you. So for the agenda, if you can put Greg the agenda back, please.
Oh.
Okay, so we'll move to the financial report. Thank you. Greg?
Okay, so we're talking about October, puts us 33% through the year. As we always start out, we start out with revenue. Try to highlight everything here. So for our state, our budget's 9.3 million. We have 7.6 or 82%. Our local, which I'll share in a minute, we did get our preload from all the school districts, so we did come up. 5.8 is our budget. We have 2.3 million or 40%, but that's typical for this time of the year. And then we do have all of our consolidated grant, which is our federal funding. Our budget's 606,000. And as you can see, that's exactly what we have, 100%. So right now, and again, this is a preliminary budget. When we meet again in January, I'll be giving you a whole new budget and all the financial reports will match that going forward. But right now, our budget is for a year, revenue is about 15.7 million. We have about 10.6 or 67%, excuse me. About 67%. And then for our expenses, as I will, I'll get into the detail in a few minutes, but right now we're 33% through the fiscal year. As you know, we're a little ahead because of startup expenses and our bond financing and construction that hit all very early, like July and August this fiscal year. But the overall budget is 15.6 million. We're at 6.6 or almost 6.7 million. 43%. And like always, we have the one unfavorable variance, which again down here is because of the debt service that's paid, the $1.3 million debt service that's paid in July. For the month of October, we spent about $1.3 million. You can see on the line graph, the red line is slowly making its way back to the blue. By the end of the year, we'll trend under it. We will not spend more money than we have, so no concerns there. And then the thing I want to point out here, I mentioned earlier, we did lock in at 1,060 students. So this whole graph will be updated as far as the number of students that we get from each school district and then obviously the new budgeted numbers. But per a preliminary budget, our budget was 4.2 million. I told you we did receive all the school district preload, which is 35% of their funding. So we're in good shape there. It's, again, typical. I know it shows we're still missing $2.5 million, but we'll pick the rest of this up now that the unit count has been confirmed. December and early January, we'll have all of our local school district funding. And then this is our true cash position. This includes everything, our carryover from last year, the $1.9 million, and then any encumbered funds that we have for expenses. But overall, we have almost $12.5 million to date, and we spent about $6.7, about $2,400 in encumbered funds. But bottom line is we have $5.8 million remaining balance as of the end of October. I'm trying to clean this high school available cash up. And I was thinking today, and I know we'll talk more about it in our financial oversight committee meeting, really what we need to be shown here, the available cash for high school capital expenditures. So really, I think, and I know we'll talk more about this, Lewis, in our financial oversight committee meeting. We really want to track what is really allocated in capital funding towards the high school. And I know, Lourdes, you would ask me to, next time I send you an update, to tie that into the capital funding, so I can do that as well. But I think last month I must have had, and it's because we have money that goes in different buckets. I had a few different lines highlighted, but really this is truly it. So like your local construction, that's an appropriation that is really just for construction. This money, believe it or not, I don't know if you remember early on in the first phase of construction, we had to pay Verizon an awful lot of money to come out and dig a trench to run their line. But we finally got a reimbursement. So that's why we have $8,000 showing there. And then, Lourdes, this is your capital campaign money right here, which obviously is for a high school. And then, as we all know, last year we got $1 million for a charter school expansion. We only had $206,785 left at the end of last year. So I think, I don't know, for me, it's a little more palatable, and I know Lewis will talk a little more about it, but from the board's perspective, I think the number they need to know, and we need to know, how much money do we have available to dump into, not, that's a bad way to put it, but to put towards a high school.
Hey, now, Greg, one question about that line item. Is the 197, is there any additional payments or invoices we have to cover from the 2.8 million? There's no more invoices for that construction?
No, there's not. And that's why I knew I could finally clean this up, because I thought it was getting a little messy to follow. And if I'm having trouble with it, I think it's hard for me to present it too, but it's hard to understand when you've got six or seven different lines that are highlighted, because truly this is an operational budget that we're looking at, an operating budget. So
yeah, and we can probably try to evolve how we show this over time. I think it's good that we at least got started, and now we can at least zone
in on. And now I know that was the initial goal that we talked about. It's a little bit of a work in progress, but I think we're getting better. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Okay, so then this sheet is obviously important. This is all our grants started with last year and this year, but again, these are the ones that we're hoping, the Crystal and the Hearst Foundation. We really hope that we get some good news here in the next few weeks. I know Lourdes and Lynn put a heck of a lot of work into these grants. So, hey, we'll take anything we can get, but hopefully we're going to get some good news. So the ones that are not filled in, obviously, are still outstanding. But, you know, again, these are the two, the new schools, which this is what we were awarded, $520,000, and the charter school growth fund, the big grant, because we got an additional $60,000. But that one and this one, they're the ones where we get three increments or three installments of payments, or funding, I should say, not payments, which is nice to know. Okay, so now for the detail, as I talk about always, salaries, budget $6.5 million, we're at 2.4 or 36%. Total or other employment cost, OECs, $3.7 million a budget, we're about 1.3 or 34%. As always, I have all the comments on the right that would be considered a variance, even though it's just an individual line item. Then total travel, which is basically the big one here, is that's to transport students back and forth. $1.06 million of budget. We're at about $192,000 or 18%. Then total contracted services, $2 million of budget. We're at $1 million or a little over $1 million, 52%. And again, I've got comments here, and this is all on the website. It is every month. And then total supplies, materials, $730,000 is the budget. We have a little bit of encumbered money, but basically we're at $370,000 or 51%. Total capital outlay equipment, $145,000 is the budget. We spent $72,000 or 50%. And then I should have highlighted this one. Total capital outlay property, $1.5 million of budget, we're about 1.4 or 92%. Grand total, again, the budget for expenses is $15.65 million. With the $2,400 of encumbered funds, we've spent $6.7 million or 43%. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it's a little higher than the 33% if you look at it on a month-to-month basis where we should be, but it's very typical what we see every year. And I have absolutely no concerns with this at all. And I will tell you that I'm actually excited to present the final operating budget in January. I've done a lot of work on it, and I'm just so happy that the funding came in like it did. And the big sticking point to all of us was, were we going to be able to give everybody increases they deserve, especially on how hard all the teachers and staff have been working. And we've already done that. So again, I think you're going to see with the construction, things like that, you're going to see a nice operating budget come January. Any questions?
No, Greg, I just want to congratulate you and Luis in a fantastic job. I've been part of 20 plus board of directors, and this is for sure the best financial analysis that I've seen in a long time.
Well, that's so nice to hear. Thank you.
Perspective to have this level of analysis for a not-for-profit organization. So I commend you, and of course, with your team and the staff and everybody involved has put on it. You are the face of the financial aspects of the school, but clearly this is a peace of mind knowing that somebody fully responsible and on top of things shares and provides that peace of mind. I thought important to mention that to you, because I know that financial aspects are not the sexiest part of the agenda, yet yeah. It is extremely important, and I commend you and Luis and Margie for doing such a fantastic job. So
thank you so much. Really appreciate that.
Thank you. That's awesome. I appreciate you giving them that feedback. I will say too that when I serve on other organizations, I always compare their financial reporting to ours, and I think, oh, ours is so much better.
You know what, Margie, from that perspective, if there's a way to translate best practices and share Greg's knowledge to some other not-for-profits, just a side income might be, something you might entertain.
if all possible.
So okay, you mean the one thing I have to do is give Greg a ton of credit. I mean, this was already here before I got here. So I am honored that I've been able to just stand on those shoulders, so to say, and help just enhance where they already are. But I cannot take credit. This was already there. Greg has already been doing this practice.
Well, just for the record, so everybody's clear, Greg, I'm your agent.
I do appreciate the comments, and I'm gonna go back at this board and Margie, you know, from day on, I will tell you, she'll tell you, I didn't have the skill set to take this job. I never thought it would evolve into what it is today. I absolutely love it, and I love the organization. I love Margie and working for Margie, but it's because of the high bar that she has set from day one. She knows I'm a worker. And then having the board that we have, I would tell you, Margie and I talk often because I'm on meetings like you are, Lourdes, with my peers, my level with Kendall, and some of the things that I hear, I just cringe. It's like, wow, we're so fortunate. And everyone's vested in this organization. I think that we're just so fortunate. And I got to give big kudos to Lewis because he has been an amazing treasure. They've all been great, but he's at a level than nobody else. And he understands what we do, and I can lean on him. And, you know, it's a two-way street with us, and I love it. So I just appreciate all of you, but I wasn't anticipating getting these remarks tonight. I appreciate it. And then I'm just going to shut up now.
So much love. So much love.
Yeah. No, but I think it's credit where credit is due. Certainly, you know, there was an excellent infrastructure that was put in place very early on. And we learned from a lot of people with big expertise. But I do have to agree with Greg. I mean, Luis, you certainly have pushed the bar. We thought we got it good, but you certainly have pushed the bar. So don't minimize the contribution that you have made to the team, because as I said, I've been with the team for quite some time now. So I've seen the transition, transformation, that it could be even better. So certainly appreciate the push for that. I guess the beauty of this, because you know, one of the things that I always said to the board is I always also felt quite blessed, not only with the staff, so the leadership for Margie and the workhorse that Greg brings to the team, but also the board over the years have been really outstanding from the perspective of the push and the shove in terms of really striving for excellence. So I certainly have learned a lot myself, have grown myself to also, you know, keep pushing. But I certainly have appreciated the fact that people have come in and really not necessarily be complacent with what was given, but also challenging us to continue to be better. So, you know, please let's keep coming. Let's do more of that, because as you will see, we continue to want to grow, and you know, we have something good, and we certainly want it even better. So thank you for that. I'd like to move to our approval of the budget as presented. Do I have a motion to approve the financial report?
Motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second, Santiago.
Thank you. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Greg, Operations Committee, please.
Yeah, so this will be short, but obviously everyone knows we're going to be focusing now until, you know, we start the hybrid, the next hybrid model, January 19th. So we're shifting gears now and planning for that. When it comes to, again, the bus routing, getting all the data, the meal planning, the facility prep, but, you know, all of our procedures, the arrivals, dismissals, but I just know that the entire team, as I said, the teachers we know work very hard, but everyone else on the outskirts that support the school and the teachers, I know they're going to continue to step up and do an amazing job. And I'm just looking forward to getting more students in the school. And I hope this next few weeks we can get through this spike and all that. But I'm really excited over getting more students in the school. And I know that the team wants to get back to work inside the school. So Other than that, I think we might have a motion from Lewis, but we are excited to start to kick off of phase 1B construction. So I think I'll turn it over to Lewis and let him take the ropes here.
Yeah, thanks. Lourdes, I don't know if you want to present if there is a motion or not, but.
Yeah, we probably should present it official as a motion, the approval of the continued construction for phase 1B, just for the for record that the board is in alignment and approval. So if you can put the motion to vote, I can then, manage the process.
So I motion to what we discussed during the executive session about the continuation for phase 1B.
Do I have a second for the motion?
Second, Terra Nova.
Thank you. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
So the board has approval to continue the next phase of construction, which we be phase 1B for the high school. Thank you. For the development committee, once again, as we know, we have approval for the high school. We have been working on doing renovations, and we just approved for the second phase of construction. In order to support that, we continue to work behind the scenes on building out or creating an expansion campaign. So we have had the opportunity to interview several consultant companies to help us with that. And we have made a preliminary selection. So now we're seeking board approval to engage on formal contract negotiation with the consultant. And so I like to submit a proposal or submit a motion to get approval from the board to engage with the company of Yorkston Associates and start creating the first phase of the expansion campaign proposal.
Motion to approve Cam Yorkston and Company as consultant for the first phase and subsequent activities related to the capital campaign.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Patton, second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. So we'll report back as soon as we'll start the collaboration with Yorkston and Associates. The first phase will be then scheduled to start in December with completion in January. So hopefully by the board meeting in January, we'll provide an update to the board on how that is going. And then we can make decisions about further engagement with that effort. So thank you for that. So with that, we'll take then the last agenda for the night, the head of school report. Margie.
You're muted, Margie. Are you able to share?
Yeah. I have multiple things to share, but I'll start with this document and then we're going to go to a couple different screens. The first thing is I want to go over the class waiver and actually take you to the system. So the class waiver, was there a question?
No, I was going to say, could you explain what that is again?
Yeah, that's it. So the class waiver is the regulation that requires that there be a 22-to-1 ratio in every classroom in kindergarten through third grade. So every year we have to go through this class waiver process. We do a class survey, and the department I'm showing you right now, the screen. Can you guys see that screen? It didn't switch over. Okay, so hold on. Let me stop sharing and then go again. Share right here. Okay, can you see that now? So can you see Greg? Are you able to see what I'm looking at?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So this is the system that is an IMS and the state system for class waiver. What they basically do is they issue each school, each public school district and charter school with the breakdown for every kindergarten through third grade classroom by homeroom, how many students are registered in that classroom. So they're pulling everything from e-school because we assign students to homerooms, et cetera. So they pull that and then determine how many teachers are assigned to each classroom. And then that gives you a determination as to whether the K-3 ratio of 22:1 is met. Every year up to this year, we've been able to meet that ratio. Now, in order to meet that ratio, that meant that we needed to have additional staffing as far as paraprofessionals in each grade level. And this year, as we prepared for the start of this year, you know, last year when we were in the hiring process, if you recall, at that point we had the salary freeze. We had to unfortunately tell our team that we would not be able to provide them with an increase and that we would have to revisit that later on in the school year. So obviously it was not a time for us to extend our salary expense. It was a time for us to tighten up. So Greg and I had, you know, talked about the impact that some of those decisions would have on things like this. So if you go down this list, as you can see, the yeses versus the noes. So we have five classrooms, two in second grade and three in third grade that end up being a no, which means that, for example, in this second grade classroom, there's 27 students, there's only one teacher. So it's a 1-to-27 ratio. Same thing for this classroom, 1-to-27. Here in third grade, we have a 1-to-26 ratio, here 1-to-26, and here 1-to-27. You can see in the other classrooms, we do meet the ratio because we do have a combination of regular education teachers dedicated to that homeroom. In some cases where you see sort of a 0.5 or a 0.25, that's a shared resource. Here in the teacher column, that would be the special education teacher that is shared across multiple homerooms. And then here the column is for paraprofessionals where you have either a dedicated paraprofessional as you have right here, or you have a paraprofessional that is shared over multiple homerooms. So 5 out of our 16 homerooms do not meet the ratio, which is 31%. As much as I would like to continue the trend of not having to do a waiver is very much commonplace. It's something that most districts do waivers every year. Most of the charter schools have done waivers every year, but it's definitely something that we at Aspida have been able to avoid because we've been able to, get the staffing and then spread out the staffing in a way that allowed us to continue to support students in every single homeroom. Now, I will tell you that the homerooms that do not meet, they happen to be the homerooms that were not assigned students, special education students. So the other classrooms are where we assigned students with IEPs and with other needs. So those resources are dedicated in the right places. So what happens now is then the board needs to approve that you're okay with the fact that we are not meeting in 31% of our homerooms. All I need to do then is in the system is check off a box that says the board approved this.
So Margie, so we are, I just wanna make sure I say it back to you.
Yeah.
So I understand is, so we're saying that in you said five of the classrooms, five of the 16 classrooms that we have a ratio higher than one to 22.
Mm-hmm. It's 1-to-26 and then 1-to-27.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay.
So, and the only way to avoid the waiver is that we would have to hire two additional paraprofessionals.
Margie, though, so Red Clay went through something similar, and Theo actually goes to a school where this was affected. But, and I'm reading the article now. Mm-hmm. How does that 27 or 1-to-26? Is it remote learner? Like, I think when Red Clay had this happen, it was the remote classrooms that they were speaking of that were exceeding the classroom sizes, which I didn't even realize they had a classroom size for a remote setting. So this, there were cases where they had 10, 15 over the ratio.
Yeah, but we
have saying you're in, well, I guess you're not, you're not back yet though. The only
no, and we haven't divided up the students in that way. So keep in mind these homeroom assignments were done in the summer. So there is a certain percentage of students in each homeroom that will be you know, choosing to stay remote for this next phase, which I'm going to discuss later on in my update. But yeah, we don't have it separated. It sounds to me like what you're describing is that Red Clay actually separated the students by homeroom based on their style of learning, their mode of learning. Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've never witnessed this yet in our board meetings, but I have a very hard time accepting because that will ultimately translate into an in-school classroom size, correct? I mean, is that not very difficult for one teacher to be managing 26, 27 kids without a paraprofessional?
Well, I'll let Tiffany, Tiffany's our teacher representative. So Tiffany, if you want to respond from your perspective.
Yeah, it is challenging, especially coming back to, especially this year, getting back into a building with students that have been remote for so long, and that may be struggling or a little bit behind and trying to play catch up and make sure that they are meeting where they need to be by the end of the year. So I think having extra hands never hurts. So I think it is something that we should, if possible, consider having the extra support, just thinking ahead.
May I? As a parent too, I do not feel comfortable with having that many children not meeting the ratio. The ratio is there for a reason. It's so teachers are able to support these students, especially the most young. And I do not feel comfortable having such large numbers with just one teacher in the room. And it means just two more paras. The budget looks good. I just don't, that's just me coming from a parental perspective.
Is there a way, Donald, you got something?
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just thinking about the math equation to this. Of course, you know, I go to the math equation of it. Would it be a potential situation where we could hire one para and have one waiver and try to limit that? Or are we looking to, you know, more asking folks who have the concerns around the ratios?
It won't have any bearing on the discussion, I think, holistically, but this is a standard practice. Every school and every school district applies for this waiver. At some point, it tends to, in our situation, it won't as much, but in other situations where kids are coming and going after the September count, well, this year's November, count, and those rooms can get even larger, and you can't hire other people because your commitment has already been made back in September normally. So when it's not always desirable, I just want to let everyone know for school districts, it's realistic, it's practical, it occurs all the time. So just consider that also, so that we just know it's not out of the ordinary that this occurs. If we can do something to minimize it, then that makes sense. But again, it's not out of the ordinary.
I understand it's not out of the ordinary. And being in Red Clay, I know it happens all the time. I've never been in agreement with it because it's not ratios. I mean, it's a children you're talking about with one teacher. So at the end of 22, and you have 5 extra bodies in there, it makes a huge difference. I have seen it. That's just me.
So yeah. Margie, for clarification, I know the concerns because I myself have been concerned about the number of students. And at one point I made it a point as a discussion for the board, and we evaluated the ratio and how many students and so on and so forth. So just for clarification, this is something that Aspira had not had the need to do in its history on a consistent basis, because you know we have the paraprofessionals support. Mm-hmm. When the decision on staffing was made for this, you know, for this year, we took the conservative approach with the understanding that, you know, in the future we might end up here to have this discussion, this dialogue, and potentially this approval, this support. But this strictly has to do with this school year. It's not that we're voting on a practice, that we're voting on something that we want to do. So can mm-hmm. you clarify more, Margie?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, we've been able to do it because keep in mind, we've had the luxury of generating our own revenue through our before and after care and summer programs, which absolutely went to zero. So we don't have that additional revenue. And we had the need to hire an additional special education and paraprofessional for middle school. So keep in mind that this class waiver only looks at kindergarten through third grade, but we have other grades to take care of. So we did do additional hiring, but we allocated those additional resources to the middle school because we do have a growing special ed population there as well. So this is not something that we would want to have become standard practice, but we thought if there was one year where an exception needed to be made, it was definitely in this COVID year where there was so much uncertainty around the state budget and therefore all the school operating budgets. And you know, we felt that we needed to take a more conservative approach for this year. So to hire two additional paraprofessionals would be really tight, you know, and so one possible possibility would be if there's an opportunity to pull one of the individuals from the ECDC and pull them over to fill one of the para positions in one of the grades. But I don't believe that we have the capacity to pull two out of the ECDC.
And when's the next projected date that these students will be in the building? Well, when will this actually be? Because right now it's not an actual ratio that is occurring in a classroom, correct?
Well, yeah, it's not. But I mean, I'm sure Tiffany will attest to the fact that regardless of whether we're virtual or face-to-face, we're still attending to the needs of that right. number of students. But yeah, I get what you mean. I mean, it's definitely different when they're in person. But so we're anticipating going hybrid on January 19th.
But families still have the option to choose.
Yes, yes. Yes, and as a matter of fact, the survey was completed on Tuesday. I haven't had an opportunity to look at the roll up of exactly how many students are going to opt for a remote in each grade. But yeah, that's definitely one of the factors. And so one of the things that we'll be doing in this next phase of hybrid is that in each grade level, they will be deciding how to approach the hybrid learning. So let's say, for example, in second grade, where two of the homerooms do not meet the ratio. Well, if we happen to have, you know, 50% or 60% of the students opt to stay home remotely, then they're going to have to then decide which teachers are going to be providing face-to-face instruction in the classroom versus which ones will be providing remote support to the students that are home. So the configuration of home rooms is going to change based on the plan that each of the grade level teams come up with.
Do Do we have any other comments or questions? Because I mean, we're going to have to vote. And
well, Lourdes, like I said before, I don't know that I've ever experienced something. I personally cannot vote in favor, and I've just never seen that in our board meeting. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to start there. I really feel for Tiffany. And like I said, Red Clay, we just had the same issue. Their board voted 5-2. But that was in the remote context. So I don't know if that's kind of where you're headed when you see how many are actually going to return to campus, if you're going to reconfigure, and then you've got kind of a ratio remotely and a ratio in the classroom, and we're going to be faced with a very similar situation again, whether it's in the classroom or remote.
So it looks like right now, it looks like 40% of our students are opting to go hybrid in January, 40%. But obviously that's overall, it's not broken down by grade level.
And I particularly just think that this, so third grade, what was the five out of the 16?
Two homerooms in second grade and three homerooms in third grade. So third grade actually has the biggest hit because they don't have any paraprofessionals. They have the four regular education teachers and the one special education teacher that supports only one classroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a para.
Having a third grader at home, I really feel for the third grade team. I personally can't.
And I understand. I mean, but we need to provide a direction for Margie and the team. And at least for me, just knowing that it is a strictly for the 1 year, I'm not giving a green light that this is the way we're going to operate, because I had not been supportive of the higher ratios. It's just not, you know, not the way to go. Particularly, you know, my reflection have been in terms of moving the needle as it pertains to academic performance. That has certainly been a big issue for me. But for this particular moment, you know, we need to provide the guidance so we can move forward.
I know it's not the practice that we want, but I think even more in this moment, those teachers are going to need support if and when they go back onto campus because of what's going on. And that's a lot of policing for one, you know, if they're coming back January, we're not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. So I would like to see additional support hired for those teachers.
So I guess the question, Lourdes, is what happens if we wait? And in this case, I'm not knowledgeable, unlike Sarah, in terms of firsthand experience. So I lack the knowledge to advise in this particular case, but it seems that we might need a pause here and be guided a little bit more to have a sound decision, because it's honestly, I don't know what to tell you right now.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we're against the timeline. When do we need to close the loop with DOE, Margie?
Hold on, let me pull that up. Let me see.
This has to be an anonymous decision. Everyone has to be in agreement.
No. We can vote. It's majority. The way we run the decisions is majority rules.
It says by November 30th, the school board must approve a waiver by this date, and December 21st, all class waiver survey data must be completed and the waiver form filled out. Yeah. So by December 21st. So the board has to approve it by November 30th, and then it's going to be all submitted by December 21st.
Well, we really have to approve it tonight.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's not meeting.
Well, vote on, I mean, we vote on it and see what the outcome is. And then if we don't approve, we just, the school will have to make, to address it other ways. I mean, that's just how it works.
And Lourdes, I just, you know, having been a principal and having been a teacher and having been in the classroom, I understand the concern of those who worry about that waiver. We just have to be realistic in that that waiver is for 1 through 3. At the situation in classrooms being of beyond the capacity any of us would really want happens throughout the whole building. It doesn't just happen at K through 3. It's just that the law allows for the need to have to ask for an exception for those grades. But there's nothing to say, and I think Margie indicated it, at the middle school where there was a greater need, especially with the increased number of students with IEPs. So having lived through this for over 20 years, I get it. I get the concern of parents and individuals who are not in those classrooms just trying to imagine, and the teachers who are in there happen to do it. But in the real world, it comes down to dollars and cents. And the ideal scenario would be that we just had enough money that we could make sure that we had the right ratio in all our classes. That would be the ideal situation, but it isn't. And so we have to be very careful about when we talk about spending money. And I think Lourdes, your comment about this is a one-year thing, certainly being able to sit down and have some deeper conversations over a longer period of time about if the same situation occurs next year, what will we do to have a plan? But I think if we're talking about spending more money, we just have to look at the whole picture. And I think that's not it's not the most desirable scenario, but I think it's the most realistic scenario given where we are right now. So,
once again, from my perspective and my ability to make a supportive position right now is strictly for the current school year. It is really, it's very much driven by the uncertainty of COVID. That of course, we end up in a better place than we were. So doesn't preclude after we go through the approval that we continue to look into the staffing and make other considerations. But because of the DOE rules that, there's a timing associated with that. So I feel very strongly about let's come together, provide direction to the staff so they can move forward. But, with the understanding that, this is not the way we like to operate. And to your point, Mr. Patton, I think we need to holistically take a look at the longer term strategy to manage that this is not the case, going forward and give us a lot, more manageable, from the ratios perspective going forward. So, but let me make sure, let me allow if there's any other questions, otherwise I really need a motion to support, and then we vote. And it doesn't mean that it's unanimous. That we can say no. Bearing no questions, so yes, Marisa.
I have a question. If we say no, what happens? The money has to come from somewhere else, and what happens?
Yeah, we're going to have to, steal from Paul to pay Peter. So we're going to have to do some internal shuffling. And so there'll be, obviously repercussions somewhere else in the organization and the operations.
Would the board have to approve that? Or this requires board approval because you have to apply with something from the state?
Yeah, it's just the class waiver approves, requires a board approval if we're going to be asking for a waiver basically from the state. But if it's not approved, then Greg and I will go back to the budget to see exactly how we can maybe make some internal moves in order to cover that spot. You know, I know that hiring two additional paras, because you got to consider, I mean, you may be thinking of, well, their salary is only 20,000, for example, but you're talking about a fully loaded, full-time expense. Many times paraprofessionals have their whole family on their benefit plan. So the expense to the school of two paraprofessionals could be $100,000. That right, Greg?
Yes. Well, it is pretty high, and that would mean money that we hadn't even planned for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just for example, health insurance for one person carrying a whole family can be over $20,000 to the school. So when we talk about fully loaded, like Margie was saying, people always look at, hey, this is what I make. Well, you might as well throw 30% on top of that for OECs that we pay, and then plus the health insurance, which could be zero, a little over $20,000 per team member. That's just the way it works.
And not to put you on the spot, Greg, what do you think would be, you know, robbing Paul to pay Peter? What do you think Paul might be?
Well, that's
just so people have a sense of what they're voting on.
So we always look, and I'm in the budget every day. We obviously don't want to overhire. This was a unique year because we know we're getting crushed on the school revenue side, which is $7,000 a day. It's a lot of money that we're not bringing in. But one of the pieces that I think Margie mentioned, one of the areas you cannot deviate from is special ed funding. So for example, if our special ed population went up, we did get more money because special ed brings a significant amount of funding, but we have to hire special ed, you know, teachers to support those students because it's a needs-based unit formula that's how we get funded in the state of Delaware. So it's not so easy. What I will tell you is it's not going to be easy to just say, okay, we're going to commit $100,000 of this operating budget to two more paras. I think we really have to take a hard look at the makeup of our students and really get into the detail of, like Margie was saying, maybe there's some shifts that can be made. I'm not the educator. You know, Margie and her instructional leadership team would have to look at the skill sets and the pairs and how to do that. I can't answer that, but I can tell you how the funding works. I know that, and I said it, the budget's going to be a nice budget, but I certainly wasn't anticipating, you know, we have cash carryover, but I wasn't anticipating another $100,000 and potential salary expense.
Yeah, and one of the things from a carryover perspective that I think we need to consider, because I tell you now, I'm struggling with the decision. I'll just be transparent, and I'm like empathetic to the teachers and everything that everyone is going through this year, no question. And I'm trying to balance it in my head. The one thing about the carryover, however, is that the school does need to carry over at least, and Greg, correct me if this, four pays.
Yes.
Salary at all times. That four pays is something that, so we have to have enough cash on hand that if we shut down, God forbid, that we are able to pay all the staff for effectively 2 months. And so we have to keep that amount of money on hand. And I'm thinking we're pretty on top of that number. And I don't know what the exact number is, but I think that's the one thing we do have to consider, and knowing that that number is going to be and has been tight in the past. And as we continue to grow, we're going to create some separation where we have additional cash on hand. But Greg, what is that number? Just so that.
So our payroll is running about 400,000, and it'll be a little more next week because we're paying some EPA, but about $400,000 a week. So you're looking at a minimum of $1.6 million that we have to have as cash carryover. So it's unfortunate, but that's the way it works. So we're obligated to pay the staff what they're, even though we don't use the word contract, but teachers get paid, they're 10-month employees, but they obviously get paid over 12 months. So we carry their benefits. Basically, their pay gets spread out over 26 pays. So once July hits, July and August, those four pays are really for last year's work, if that makes sense to everybody.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's pretty much where we are, I think, planning to be close to the end of the year.
Right.
So, you know, because I'm sitting here again, and I'm struggling with the decision, but I'm also thinking about all the variables like everyone else. So it's a good dialogue. I just think
I'm struggling as well. It's hard to make a decision when you don't know what the actual consequence will be if you say no.
Right.
So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. And this is
Alberto. Sorry. Sorry, Luis. So our bylaws permit special meetings of the board. Why don't we just notice a special meeting for before November 30th? That gives Greg and Margie time to figure out what would be the potential repercussions of cutting if we vote no on this. And then at that meeting, we can make an informed decision.
I hate to make them do the work if ultimately we're going to decide to vote in favor of the waiver, but I think it would make the decision easier. You know, if the alternative is it's, you know, it's sort of a worse situation for the kids and for the teachers, then, you know, but again, I hate to make them do the work if ultimately we would decide in favor of this, but it is hard to make a decision, an informed decision, without knowing what the consequence will be.
Yeah, I would feel uncomfortable making a decision right now without knowing what the potential consequence would be.
Same. Yeah, I honestly feel the same way.
One question, Margie. Let's assume that and we're playing scenarios here. Let's assume that we decide to support this move.
Mm-hmm.
Can you reverse that when you get more information? How long does it stay if we decide to go for it? And can you make the correction at a later time if needed? How does that work? I don't really know.
So, yeah, so it says December 21st is when the documents are due to DOE. So, I mean, that's a good point that so let's say tonight you guys approve it, and then Greg and I go back and look at the operating budget and we find a way to actually close the gap, then I won't submit the paperwork until December 21st. Then I could come back to the board and say, we actually closed the gap. We're not going to check off class waiver. We're not going to ask for a class waiver any longer. We figured it out. But at least we wouldn't have to meet again to get the approval. So, I mean, that's if we're not able to find a way to close the gap, then we'll be coming back to you to say, this is what, you know, this is what the repercussions are. This is how much it would require for us to be able to meet the weight, the ratio, and then proceed from there.
Well, Margie, I actually think we would actually still need to meet to revote again, even if we do say yes and you decide we don't want to do it. I think we would have to re-meet and vote to say no.
To say no. Mm-hmm.
So I think either way, we would have to meet again.
I guess I didn't necessarily, I'm sure, I apologize. I didn't necessarily follow that because I thought Margie said that if we support, but they decide that it's no longer needed and the paperwork doesn't get submitted, then the whole thing just didn't get submitted. It just was no longer needed. So what will we be voting on again, Alberto? I'm not sure I understood that.
Yeah, and I don't think we have to meet again. I think certainly she would have to come back in January and tell us that she didn't submit it, we didn't need it, so the board has the information. But I don't think there's anything statutory that says that we have to meet again. We're approving it based on the fact that we're asking for it. If we don't ask them for it, we go back to the status that we had before we voted to ask for the waiver. Only until we submit it would the board have to take action if we decided we wanted to find money someplace or do something else. But if Margie and Greg go and find some money and say, we don't need to submit it, then we just don't submit it. They don't submit it. And then they just make us aware of the fact that they didn't submit it. But if
from a government standpoint, they would have to follow what the board says. So if we have voted yes, they have to do it. So we would like we would need to, if they find that money, we would then need to vote to say, okay, you're right, we can find the money somewhere else. We're going to say no on the waiver.
Yeah, but I don't think
at that point there would be no waiver. There would be no waiver then. At that point, is a mute point.
I guess it's how the motion is worded, right? So if the motion is that the board is approving the waiver if there is no other solution, then there's obviously that contingency. If we find the solution, then I go back into that document that I showed you, and I then insert that paraprofessional in there, and that will turn everything to yes, right? That means all of the five classrooms would turn yes. And then it doesn't even take me to the class waiver page because it's not applicable any longer.
Yeah, I think the concern, and I don't want to speak for anyone else. I think the concern is that if so, this might sound like we don't trust you, Margie, that we don't think you're going to do the right thing. Like this is just saying it now. This is what it's going to sound like. But the reality is if we vote yes, mm-hmm. then, you know, yes to the waiver, then that, how does that incentivize Margie to make sure her and Greg go back and do the right thing, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I say that in air quotes because I think that's probably the hesitation, Donald, more than anything, is that we say yes to a waiver that we're not comfortable with the condition that Margie goes back and looks for the money. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not saying you aren't, look for where I can just say, you know what? They already approved it and they send off the waiver when I don't think that was the intent. Mm-hmm. So I think it's probably that of if we're going to vote yes, we got to word it a certain way. But I also think that we got to be careful because we want to make sure the management team goes back and takes a hard look at how they can really make that happen and put the best foot forward and the best effort forward to avoid.
So can we agree then to meet on the 30th? I mean, that is the last day. If we meet on the 30th for 15 minutes and then that gives Greg and I enough time to look at what we can do.
In favor of that, Margie, I think that's fair enough and gives you time and Greg to analyze. So mm-hmm, I'm mm-hmm. for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So, okay. We'll table mm-hmm. this discussion. We'll have a special meeting November 30th. Mm-hmm. Greg, if you can go ahead and send an invite so everybody have it on their calendars. And then we'll commit that this will be the only agenda item for that evening.
So do we want to go at 6 o'clock then?
Yes, please.
And we'll meeting... Will I have to create an agenda and yes. minutes for that?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, we have to post it and all that, Sarah, but it's okay. This is fine. So, we can.
So for tonight's meeting, we are just saying we're postponing.
We'll table the discussion for a special meeting November 30th.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. So enrollment update. So a choice window has opened. We've been hosting virtual open houses, which have been going pretty well. I mean, obviously you just can't expect the same level of attendance for virtual versus in person, but each one of our K-8 sessions have been anywhere from 20 to 30 families represented in Spanish and in English because we do them simultaneously. And then in high school, it's been anywhere from 1, which was last night, up to about 20. So it's definitely been sort of varied. And as you would expect, we have more interest in the K-8 than at the high school. We are beefing up our advertisement. We're going to be doing some digital marketing Last year we did some radio ads. We really did not see them be as effective. And I think right now with COVID and just people not listening to the radio to the same extent that they used to, you know, usually that was, it would be playing in the dentist's office and the doctor's office. And, you know, you would be able to get some airtime, but right now it just seems more questionable. So we're going to go with digital marketing to try to beef up the attendance and the interest. As far as our applications, this is where we are right now. So we've received 336 applications at this point. When we look at where we are now, this far into the choice window, which is, you know, just 2 weeks versus where we were this time last year, we are trending lower, but it actually is something that is being seen across the board. That was a discussion in today's charter leader meeting. And everyone sort of shared the same sentiment that they're seeing a lower application flow this year. And we don't know, maybe with COVID, people are not looking to move schools at this time. So, you know, we're gonna continue to monitor more of the kindergarten and ninth grade numbers and, you know, continue to find ways to make sure that we can increase that number. One of the things that we do plan to do at the high school is to continue the scholars program, which we started this year. We have 26 eighth graders that are in the scholars program. And if you remember, it's a way for our more motivated and accelerated students to be able to actually accelerate their high school education because they're able to earn high school credits, two high school credits as eighth graders, and then continue from there. So we are also advertising that scholars program. So at the West Campus, we plan to have the 10th grade class, the 9th grade class, and then an eighth grade scholars program again. So that's where we are with enrollment. And I believe I sent the flyers out to you guys and they'll be, we'll be sending out some campaigns through Facebook and Instagram. And if you could share that out and just continue to spread that out, it would be helpful. Word of mouth has always been our best form of advertisement. And then the digital marketing that we're doing through Beasley Media Group is specifically targeting families with children that are, you know, school age. And you know, we worked with them last year and they do a really good job of showing us exactly how many impressions we're getting. So we'll see exactly what we get out of that. We also did invest in some banners. So the banners went up today. So we have a big sign at the East Campus. We have a big sign on the corner, the intersection of Red Mill and Ruthar that states that we're enrolling, but also we got two additional signs so that you see it coming from Red Mill and you see it coming from Ruthar. And then at the West Campus, we got a huge sign along Otts Chapel Road that states that we're enrolling. So we're hoping that that will also get us some additional interest. In addition to hosting the virtual open houses, we are also hosting face-to-face school tours. I should send you the video. Really a big shout out to Lynn's husband and his friend have a drone. And they volunteered their time and their services to actually do this awesome video of a virtual tour of our campuses, of both of them. So they're able to go through, you know, indoors, and Miss D was in the Wolfie costume. So she was the tour guide. And so we're able to show the inside of our building and even the outside of our building. So it was really well done. And we've used that at the end of each of our open house presentations so that the families and the students can see exactly what the building looks like. So the closest we can get to actually being face-to-face and being able to do it live, but it was really well done. So we're really grateful. Oh, and actually I should also say that our school counselor, Stephanie Mortimer, was our editor. Like she took all the footage and actually turned it into video. And that's just sort of a hidden talent that she has. And she volunteered her time to do that. So just another example of the great work that our team has and how they all pull together to make things happen. Another thing I want to mention regarding enrollment is that definitely due to the COVID situation, we've had to consider whether or not this is the time for us to move from having a manual lottery to an electronic one. You know, every year we've hosted a live manual lottery with the big brass barrel, and we put all the cards in there, and Greg, you know, shakes it up, and we pull names for hours and hours and hours. And as our application volume has increased, obviously the amount of time it takes to do that has increased. And so we've seen other schools, districts, and charters move towards the electronic version of the lottery. And I think, you know, we talked about it again this year, and we just, in regards to doing it a safe way, not having, you know, because unless you have people pre-register, you really don't know how many people are going to show up for the lottery. So social distancing becomes something that has to be policed and monitored. And so we feel that, that the right thing to do is to just go to the electronic option. Which the data service center oversees. They do all of, they do that for all of the districts and charters that do electronic. And so, and we've, Greg and Lilia went and consulted with the other schools that have done it, specifically the charter schools and Newark Charter, MOT, and they spoke very highly of the process. They have not had any concerns or issues with the process. It's been a very efficient way of, you know, getting through thousands of applications. We wanted to just give you a heads up that we were going to be moving to that electronic process. Any questions about enrollment?
From a marketing perspective, do we have a sense of what, as we go through and we look at those impressions, what they actually convert into students?
We, you know, last year when we did this, it was interesting. They would meet with me every week to show me the impressions. And we would definitely see like a spike right after an open house event. You would see then the increase in impressions to the website and to the different banners. We then have to sort of tie that, you know, make the connection to the number of applications that we receive. So last year when they would meet with me, I would have the application volume by day, and then I would have their impression data by day to see whether the impressions were actually resulting in applications. And so there was a correlation. I mean, you could see that there was the peaks and the valleys based on the number of impressions. Now, last year we also had the radio ads that were running, so I could actually see what time the radio ad ran and then whether or not it spiked impressions and then applications. So I feel really good about the expertise that they have in that area. I think it's the best bang for our buck right now, being able to do very targeted marketing. Last year we did the radio ads, we even did direct mail, we did postcards, and we just did not see the lift from the direct mail or the radio ads as we did with the digital.
Yeah, with direct mail, you're lucky to get a 1% kind of response rate. I don't think that's probably the most inefficient way for it. But that makes a lot of sense. And the key here is getting the application. So the conversion, so to say, is really the application in the door, mm-hmm. which would equate then the student in the lottery. Mm-hmm. That is really where the value in that product. Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I'm following. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So the last thing I wanted to share with you is the reopening updates. I'm just going to stop sharing and then go to a different presentation. So Jose and I hosted listening sessions on Monday night and Tuesday night. We did two each night in Spanish and in English. So this was sort of part two of the listening sessions that we hosted back in July. If you remember, we hosted like six listening sessions back then, inviting the students, the families to join us to sort of hear our thought process in the reopening plan and be able to field any questions, et cetera. So this was the next iteration of that session. And it was our opportunity to sort of show them how we've done this first half of the year and what the plans are for the second half of the year. And so I shared some of this information with you in the last board meeting, but giving them a snapshot of how the first round of hybrid went. So, you know, we decided to go with only kindergarten and first grade at the East Campus and then the West Campus. And so we went with the abbreviated schedule. And if you look at the percentages, we had about 62% of our kindergartners opt for hybrid, 57% of our first graders. So it was about 60% total between those two grades that were participating in hybrid. And because of that number, we went with the Blue Wolves, Gold Wolves rotation. So each of the groups came in for 2 days of face-to-face and then 3 days remote. And then at the West Campus, we had an exact 50% split. So out of the 106 students that we had 53 sign up for hybrid. And so we were able to keep them in one group. We kept them on their regular schedule, 7:15 to 2:15. So they had a full schedule. And because of the number of students, we were able to allow them to come 4 days a week face-to-face and only one remote. And most of the students took advantage of the 4 days. There were some students because of situations at home where they needed to be able to be home to take care of younger siblings that they needed to stay home more than the 1 day. But the good thing is that we had really good attendance, and when they weren't able to be face-to-face, they jumped on remotely. So if you look at the top there, you know, that was sort of the timeline where we started our year with 6 weeks of remote. We went to 6 weeks of hybrid, which would have taken us through this week. Unfortunately, though, last week we were off on Wednesday for Veterans Day, and we were notified at that time that we had multiple cases of positive COVID. So we had worked with DPH to do the contact tracing, and based on what we learned, we decided to close the campus for Thursday and Friday so that we could do a deep cleaning at both campuses. And then Friday afternoon, we had to make a decision for this week, which would have been the 6th week of hybrid before we then went remote after Thanksgiving. And, you know, although there was reasons to go ahead and reopen, the risk seemed to be really minimal, if at all. The bigger concern, though, was the spike in cases, as you guys have all seen. And, you know, even last night when New York City, the biggest, the largest school district in the country, decided to go remote. So that was more of a factor in our decision than really the isolated incident that we were dealing with. So we sent out word to our community that we would be going back to remote this week. And it was sad because, you know, we have students that definitely were looking forward to an additional week of face-to-face and interaction with their teachers and with their classmates. But our families were at least understanding that it was, you know, it was necessary. So we explained to our community that based on what we learned in that pilot, that this is what we felt is working well in what we've been able to execute in our plan. The fact that we're remaining flexible and adaptable to the current risk factors, you know, I reminded our community that the plan is fluid. The plan has to be flexible because at any given time, there may be situations that happen in our community that are going to dictate what actions we have to take, such as the situation where we had to go remote this week. But the other things that have been working well is everybody following the health and safety protocols. Everyone from, you know, the youngest students in kindergarten all the way through our oldest students in 9th grade. It's been amazing to see how much they have been able to adjust and how much they want to be able to continue to enjoy face-to-face learning. So the compliance has been great. The social distancing and the sanitation process has worked out really well. And also the testing. So we were requiring testing every 2 weeks. So everybody had to get tested before we started on October 12th, and then they had to get tested every 2 weeks thereafter. And our school nurses did a great job of confirming the receipt of negative results from everybody. And then for anyone that we did not receive results from, they were contacted and informed that, you know, their child could not come back into the building until we received that negative result. So the process has worked really well. So we know that we can continue to support that going forward. The other thing we required is this daily health screening questionnaire. It's basically 3 questions. It's quick and easy, but you know, it was definitely workable for the team. I think the team got into the habit of completing that every morning. It was a bit more of a struggle for the students. But it definitely for the team, we felt that it was something that we want to continue. And then the other thing we feel that worked well is giving families choice, letting them decide what was in the best interest of their child or their children, remote versus hybrid. So as far as things that could work better, one thing that we definitely discovered is that we need to find more effective ways to support students in both learning environments. What we, you know, tried to do is really serve the needs of the students that were face-to-face simultaneously while we were serving the needs of the students that were remote. And I can share with you as the Spanish teacher at the high school that was so challenging. And you almost felt so defeated at the end of the day because you didn't really feel completely good about how you executed the lesson and how engaging the students were, because you were trying to really accommodate for both a set of students. And it really is challenging, even with all the technology. I know for me, the technology even makes it more complicated for me, but the teachers are definitely more versed on the technology than I am.
I take a screenshot?
Hello. So wait,
before she switches it.
Shift command 3.
So we definitely want to find more effective ways to support the students. So what we really feel that it would work better is if we allow customization by grade level team. You know, what we did this time around is kindergarten and first grade basically, you know, had the same schedule. They had the same plan. And then we had a different plan over at the West Campus, but we are allowing each grade level team to come up with the plan that works best for that group of students. So for example, we're gonna be on one schedule and we are gonna go back to the full schedule. So the East Campus will be on the 8:30 to 3:30 schedule. The West Campus will be on the 7:15 to 2:15 schedule. But within each grade level, we're going to be looking at how many students have signed up for face-to-face versus remote. And then the team, the teachers, will need to collectively decide how they're going to approach that instruction, right? So if there's only 25% of the students that are going to be face-to-face, for example, then can one teacher provide face-to-face and the other three teachers support remote students? Or if it's a 50-50 split, can two teachers do face-to-face and two teachers do remote? Do they do that on a fixed schedule or they do it on a rotating schedule? Those are the kind of decisions that we're really putting in the hands of our teachers to decide what's going to work best for that team. I mean, we have amazing teachers that work really cohesively on each of the grade level teams. They have different personalities, they have different strengths. So it's really, we feel in our best interest to allow them to really tap into that knowledge and figure out what's best by grade level. So we let our families know that if they have multiple children in our school, it's possible that their second grader may have a different, you know, face-to-face experience, for example, or remote experience versus their fifth grader, because those teams are going to be customizing their plan. Now they're still going to, you know, we still have the same group of teachers dedicated to each grade level, but it's possible that if a child is going to be remote, they may only interact with or receive instruction from, let's say, two of the four teachers, not all four teachers. So,
I appreciate what I'm hearing, because I think one of the things that last time we met that I was contemplating in my head is how do we solve that particular problem mm-hmm. around teachers having to teach the class as well as teach online. Mm-hmm. And so I've reached out to a couple of people, you know, that I'm familiar with, and some schools have just said there's two things. One, teachers, they're either face-to-face 100% of the time or they're online 100% of the time. There's no mixing. So like that was the first thing. I was like, okay, well, we're mixing, so that makes it difficult. I understand we have different circumstances. But then I also like the idea that we allow the teachers to think through how they want to approach it as a team. Mm-hmm. Which I think is also really good based on individual personalities, what they want to mm-hmm. do. But also then they are comfortable in understanding what they're actually taking on. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not mandated on them, but now they are part of that solution. So I like the idea. I'm hoping most teachers make that decision to make it easier for themselves, where it's 100, one teacher, 100% of the time in one mode of teaching, and then the others based on the students. But and at the same time, putting it into their hands so that they can think through that is, I think it is very helpful too, and you get better buy-in.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, that's exactly what we're hoping for is, you know, we have confidence that they can figure out a better solution than we could, because they know the dynamics of the team. They know the dynamics of the students. You know, I think it's an extra level of complexity when it comes to the dual language piece. And keep in mind that, you know, second through fifth grade, for example, we started to specialize. So that means that each teacher, although they're certified and licensed as an elementary teacher, which does qualify them to teach all content, we had decided to specialize so that they didn't have to teach all content. They were able to sort of specialize in you know, one or two areas, where now possibly in order to make this work, and they will have to be in agreement with that, they may have to then change what content they teach or how they teach it. So, you know, and I think I'm confident that every grade level team will come up with a great plan. The question did come up, what if Margie, we can't come to an agreement? Well, the answer is, well, then I'll help you come up with an agreement. So yeah, we're gonna have to step in and help you find the solution, then we're more than willing to do that. But we first want to give them a stab at finding the solution themselves. So they've been working on that already, because we shared this information with them the week of, I think it was on November 10th when we had our team meeting. So they've met by grade level team over the last week, and they'll continue that discussion and that planning after we return from Thanksgiving. So
just very quickly, Margie, you invited me to participate in that interaction when you presented to the staff, and I think it was very, very welcoming. So Luis, to your point, I think the staff is really appreciating the opportunity to be part of the solution, and hopefully by allowing this, a more creative solution can be presented. So I'm excited about, and I have, you know, full trust that indeed the creativity of the team is going to certainly come through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Tiffany, do you have, from your perspective, how's it going for the second grade team?
So second grade is kind of posing something kind of similar to what you were saying, where we could try and divide up the team so that not as long as the numbers meet, and we can accommodate that not everyone would have to be in all 4 days necessarily, or trying to divide and conquer where there's maybe one English, one Spanish teacher on a day. But again, it all depends on how the survey played out and how we can accommodate. We are in a unique situation because we're going to have two team members on maternity leave of our four. So both starting in January, they're like days apart. So we're in a very unique situation trying to finagle and figure out the best solution for our team. But we appreciate the freedom to say, okay, what's going to work for our team? Because our team looks very different from the rest. So just being able to have that flexibility is nice.
Yeah. Thank you, Tiffany. And you should consult with fourth grade. Remember last year they were in the same boat. Two of their teachers went out on maternity leave.
For sure. Yeah.
So thank you though. The other thing we feel that we could do better is, like I mentioned, we were requiring this daily health assessment, this 3-question survey. And even though it's good intentions behind it, the amount of time it took for us to chase down which students answered the questionnaire, which ones didn't, It just was not the best use of time. So going forward, we're just going to be asking families to go through the questions. It's basically asking yourself, you know, does your child have a fever? So, you know, making sure your child doesn't have a fever and doesn't is feeling well to come to school. But if they're showing any symptoms, you know, using common sense and obviously keeping them home. So we think that, you know, by allowing, you know, families to just use their common sense and be able to do that on their own without us having to have this tedious process of trying to verify whether every student did their assessment, especially when you're talking about you know, half of the student body being having to be verified. So we'll still do it for the team, but we will do it on an honor system for the students. The other thing that we felt needed to could definitely work better is just establishing more structure and accountability in the remote learning environment. And this was sort of, you know, a message to our families too and our students that, you know, it's, we know that there's lots of different dynamics going on at home, and, you know, families, you know, are struggling themselves with how to work and still take care of their children and supervise them when they're in, you know, remote learning. But, you know, just asking for more structure and accountability at home and really working with them, you know, having the teachers work with the families to really find a solution that helps that child stay on track. You know, we definitely have been seeing that even with our older students at the West Campus, you know, holding them accountable, maybe, you know, having regular check-ins with them. You know, I was even looking into possible ways of doing wake-up calls, you know, like things, you know, anything that would work to sort of just make sure that they don't get off track and that they're not left in sort of autopilot, and that there's at least somebody asking on a regular basis, how are you doing? And how, where's your schoolwork? And, you know, because parents do have access to the teacher's grade book, but, you know, not all of them are taking advantage of that. And not all of them are monitoring how their children are doing. So, you know, we definitely had that as part of the conversation and the listening sessions. So basically what we let our community know is this is what we're looking at for the plan, is that we'll go remote now through November 30th through December 18th, which was always our plan since back in August. And then we'll have the winter break for 2 weeks. When we come back from winter break on January 4th, we're going to go back to remote, which will give all of us time to then get tested and for those negative results to be confirmed. And so that would then take us through January 15th, where January 15th is a Friday. We happen to have no school that day. It's a professional development day for the team. And then Monday, January the 18th is Martin Luther King's birthday. So we're closed. So we would then be anticipating opening for hybrid on Tuesday the 19th. And then what we're looking to do is to do this like in 6 week increments. So that will take us through February 26th, which happens to be the end of the second trimester for the East Campus. So it also coincides with the end of a marking period for them. So what we basically asked our families to do is complete a survey that was due Tuesday the 17th and tell us whether or not their child will be participating in all remote or whether they would be participating in hybrid. So those survey results are being tabulated and we'll be sharing them with the team hopefully tomorrow. So, you know, as Tiffany mentioned, they've already been working on their tentative plans, but a big part of their plan is how many students are going to be coming in face-to-face. So we want to give them that information as soon as possible. Then they'll continue to have their planning sessions. We're looking for them to then have their plans together by December 4th, and then we can communicate those plans to our families the week of December 7th. And then the other thing, just letting everybody know that obviously from December 14th through January 15th, we're going to continue to monitor the risk factors and we may need to adjust the plan accordingly. So it's very possible that, you know, the state goes into a state of emergency and the governor closes schools again. We don't know. I mean, so far it seems like they're taking a different approach than they did in New York City, where they're trying to create the restrictions sort of in, you know, restaurants and other large gatherings so that we can keep schools open. But we've got to, once again, be flexible and fluid because, you know, our best plan could be completely thrown out the window if the governor comes in and says something different. Any questions?
Just wish you the best luck and hopefully the plans and the ratios of students wanting whatever preference will match.
Yeah, not, exactly.
Don't create another iteration of the process. So I hope for the best, but honestly, I actually in a way looking forward to the creativity of the staff. I'm betting that we're going to be completely impressed with what they come up with. I honestly have no doubt.
I agree. I agree. And then the last thing I just wanted to give you a heads up, I already mentioned this to Lourdes and Mr. Patton, is there's an annual report that all charter schools have to submit by December 1st. And Department of Education was sort of dragging their feet. And it wasn't until today that they sent us an email to say, this is what we want you to do for your annual report. So realizing that they were sort of late in providing us with the information, what they're asking for is by December 1st, because it's state regulation that an annual report be submitted by December 1st. So in order to be compliant with that requirement, they're asking that we just do Section 5, which is basically all the innovative things that we do as a school that we can sort of share as best practices. So that's actually a section that we've done in previous years. So I went ahead and completed that, and I'll submit that December 1st as a draft. And then they're going to provide us additional instructions on what they want for the annual report. Remember, like, the annual report won't have any academic pieces. It sounds like what they're going to want in this annual report is more of a narrative as to how we responded to remote learning. So that will be due by December 15th, which, obviously is an issue. And we talked about that today with Kendall. All the charter leaders were all a little not happy with DOE giving us this last minute, requirement. But what we agreed to do is that we would submit the annual report as a draft form by December 15th, because most schools don't have a December board meeting. So there was no way you guys were going to get to approve it. So we'll get to approve it in January, and I'll just go ahead and submit it in draft form until then. And that's it.
Thank you. Any other final comments or questions?
No, thank you.
Yeah, so we're going to be on Monday, November the 30th to address the waiver request questions. So mm-hmm. There's nothing else. I welcome a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for your
participation. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah.
Bye-bye, AJ.